Oh, you're going to record me? There's nothing fun that's going to happen.
I'm sure you'll manage.
I don't believe that.
Okay, so I got to tell you, I don't quite remember. I'm not sure exactly what I'm supposed to talk about. So I offered Rabbi Beyer a number of things. So I told him I could show you videos of kosher slaughter, or I could talk about eating in treif restaurants. I need to know how much time you all have.
How much time do you need for whatever's the best presentation?
It's the best. The best for me, the best is to leave and go home. Right?
Okay, well, you're staying.
I'm not getting paid extra for being here
right now. Video of slaughtering in a treif restaurant?
Yeah.
We don't have time for the slaughtering video. Yeah.
Okay,
we need a Dom Mincha.
I see we have somebody who's...
We need a Dom Mincha, and we have to get to Dougie's by 5:30.
Dougie's is down the block.
So yeah, that's your time limit.
I Dom Mincha already, so... You need...
You need
5:15. Okay, so let's talk about this. I see this. My gentleman next to you, he doesn't want to see anything get killed. We'll send you out. if that will come to pass, we'll send you out first.
Thank you.
So the first thing I want to say is that I'm not going to encourage people to eat in non-kosher places. Not because I'm too religious for that, just because I make my mortgage payments every month because people eat in kosher places. But I figure you all are from Norfolk, Virginia. And, you know, that's kind of the boonies, neither here nor there. I lived in Phoenix for 12 years. At least it was a destination. I've never been to Norfolk yet. I've been to Richmond, though. I got to Richmond.
No.
It's almost in Norfolk.
No.
I was in Smithfield.
You got to come to Norfolk.
I was in Smithfield, Virginia.
That's the boonies.
That's what
a pig's for. I was in Smithfield, Virginia. Actually, they don't really park there anymore. The corporate offices are still there, but there's no park anymore over there. I'm in Smithfield. I've never been to Norfolk, but I'm sure I'll go there one of these days, and I'm sure it'll be wonderful. I hear wonderful things about Norfolk, great things about your community, and you shall continue doing all those great things. But I'm figuring that despite Rabbi Mostovsky, where is he, Rabbi Mostovsky? One of our favorite Meshkichs. Despite Rabbi Mostovsky's best efforts, there are certain limitations on your ability to, when you need something to eat, that you'll always have that food with you or it'll be available in a kosher-certified environment. So you might find yourselves in places that are not all that kosher. So I'm going to go through some of them and talk about how one would deal with them. But my disclaimer is that I'm not encouraging you that this is cool. I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're stuck, you know, the rabbis are nice enough to give you opportunities how to deal with this. Meaning, you know, it's obviously when you have the option to do things in the proper manner, you should do them in the proper manner. So the first thing... I don't know how to do this. There we go. So this is the most common thing that we deal with are coffee shops, rest stops, convenience stores. It's a little bit like, you know, obviously this thing isn't a television because I wouldn't even know what a television was. And it's nothing like, and I'm not Guy Fieri, who I don't know who he is either. And coffee shop, rest stops, and C-stores is nothing to do drivers, diners, drive-ins, and dives, right? But it's sort of like that. So you're driving around, or you're working, you want to have a meeting, you're kosher observing. It's not really so much fun to go into Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and drink a Diet Coke, right? Which you may do. We'll talk about that later. There actually probably was a time when drinking a Diet Coke in a non-kosher restaurant, you possibly were eating, not it wasn't ulcer, but you probably, there might have been some cross-contamination with non-kosher. It's much different than it used to be. Today, when you go into, it's very nice to go into a coffee shop and sit down with somebody, and you don't have to avoid necessarily eating everything in the coffee shop, or avoid the things that, you know, that person's having dinner and you're, you know, eating an apple. My father-in-law, may rest in peace, used to tell a story. My father-in-law was, we would say in Hebrew, Mekurav leMalchut. He was close to the Kennedys. He was close to the monarchy, and he was a partner in a law firm with Sergeant Shriver. And he had one, my mother-in-law says it was a horrible case. My father was the first ordained rabbi who was a partner in Free Frank and Shriver. And he went one time to dinner at Sergeant Eunice Shriver's house. And Eunice was a Kennedy, for those of you who don't remember that. And also Arnold Schwarzenegger's mother-in-law. And, of course, my in-laws only kept kosher. And everybody got what my mother-in-law would describe goyim food, which is a dry piece of chicken, some shriveled green beans and a little bit of dry rice, with you know, very English as it were. My in-laws were served at the same time. Two waiters came out. Now the way they did it in those circles, I don't know how familiar you are with those circles. You don't and you have dinner, you don't sit with your spouse. You sit with somebody else's spouse. This makes sense. So what my father-in-law was seated with Eunice Shriver, and my mother-in-law was seated with Sergeant Shriver. And my father-in-law used to tell the story how my mother, she lived well, she could still tell the story, how they came out with a pineapple, which was cut in half. And each one had a whole pineapple. There might have been 60, 50 or 60 people in it. Each one had a pineapple, half a pineapple. There were no utensils. Not of any kind, not disposable, which was, there were no utensils. And my father looked at my mother-in-law across the room, and she's like, and they sat there with their dinner mates and everybody else the whole time, not eating anything, just looking at the pineapple. He says, and the amazing part about it wasn't that they served them a half a pineapple with nobody to eat it, because maybe that was the best they could do. The amazing part is they did not even ask them how the pineapple was or what was wrong or anything. This is perfectly normal. And my mother-in-law's explanation for this is that she noticed beforehand that the main feature of the dinner was the cocktail hour beforehand, where people consumed enough calories, liquid calories with alcohol, to keep them going for months. And the food was just because you had to have food if you were inviting people for dinner. So they probably were flying much too high to notice that anybody didn't eat. So you don't have to go through that trouble when you go to a coffee shop. So we all know that when Starbucks opened up, it was literally just a kind of a coffee shop. And, you know, it was something that, from a kosher perspective, was really not a big deal. It became a little bit more complicated a number of years ago. Rabbi Heinemann has always been very committed to the idea that when there's no other choice, anything that has kosher ingredients in Starbucks is not a kosher problem. That's really great for people in Norfolk because there is no other choice. We have a list on our website of all the kosher products, which have expanded greatly. There are some no's there for people who have a kosher option, but I guess with you don't have a kosher option, you don't have another choice, then you can drink all those other things. It's nice to note this year we've entered last year into a relationship with Starbucks Corporation because they want to disseminate their kosher information much better, and a lot of things that we used to think were not kosher at Starbucks are actually kosher certified, like certain frappuccinos. We have a whole list of the syrups that are kosher there, etc. So, you know, Starbucks offers some very good options. Even if you're like super frum, there's a list there that has things that are, even if you're super frum, it tells you what's parav and what's chalav stam and what's just their equipment, etc. It's all very exciting.
Is there a difference between Starbucks kiosk versus Starbucks bigger than kiosk?
It boils down to if you really want to know the truth, I'll tell you the truth.
Okay, I hope so.
I really don't think that for you all from Norfolk it really makes a difference to know this, because you never have another option. But what it really, but there are three kinds of ways to wash dishes in the Starbucks. One, or really four kinds. One is a three-compartment sink. If it only has a three-compartment sink, so then it's not. There are no issues. As long as the ingredients are kosher ingredients, you can find the list on our website there. Everything's fine. There's another option is they have something called a low-temperature dishwasher. Low-temperature dishwashers are installed in stores that don't have three-phase electricity. The low-temperature dishwasher is not able to reach 180 degrees to sanitize it, so they use a bleach solution constantly in that dishwasher. And they test it with test strips, and that bleach solution is disgusting tasting. So the dishwasher can have absolutely no impact on your stuff. Now, there are high-temperature dishwashers in certain stores. Those high-temperature dishwashers, some of the models, there's two models. There's the Hobart LXI, and there's the Hobart LXE. Some of those models, the rinse on it is a fresh water rinse, which can, according to certain opinions, create a cautious issue if they go off the Starbucks standard operating procedure and wash their oven plate in the dishwasher. And because of that, that's really where it all comes from. And the truth is, had we known that was specifically the detail, which we could not have known until we got into this relationship with Starbucks, Rabbi Heinemann probably never would have even said that there's an issue. He probably would have said, it's all the same. However, once we know that there's an issue, so, you know, if you're in a Starbucks that has a high-temperature dishwasher where they mistakenly wash the oven plate in the dishwasher at the end of the day, so then, you know, that would be the difference. So there's no such
thing. We rinse toys in our dishwasher sometimes, but
that's not an issue. Okay.
but can I ask a question? So beyond all the details, I'm sorry. When you say
So what you're saying is, don't confuse me with the facts.
Well,
that's what I started with. You live in Norfolk. Just forget about the whole thing.
If you don't have any other option, I'm choosing to have coffee. I don't have to have coffee. So
true.
What does it mean if I don't have any?
If you really need
option,
it's shasa. We would call shasa. If you're under stress.
What is it?
You need a coffee. If you need a coffee. in the 1700s, the Noda Behuda was asked a similar question by people if they can go into non-kosher coffee houses and have a cup of coffee, despite the fact that every cup in the non-kosher coffee house was not kosher. Because in those years, all the milk was considered not kosher halachically, as opposed to the milk today. And therefore, every single cup was not kosher, and used that day was something that was not kosher. And the Noda Behuda, who was a big rabbi, far firmer than you and me, Paskin, that when somebody doesn't have another option, he felt that it was enough of a shasad chak that they could drink from a non-kosher cup. From a non-kosher cup. Yes, it's a cliche, but it's a non-kosher cup. It's that's a lettuce bow, and it was absolutely non-kosher. It wasn't stop kelim in ibn yoma, right? It is a clear halacha that when you have reason to believe that it is that the vast majority, meaning 51% of the cases, it would be permissible. You are allowed to assume that something is permissible in this kind of a situation. So if it was good for you to know the Behuda when it was for sure, sir, it's good for you if you need a cup of coffee that you could have a cup of coffee. Now, if you want to be extra careful, you have every right to do that. But that does not cast aspersions on the halachic decision that fundamentally it's permissible for somebody who doesn't have the option to go ahead and drink whatever. It is a right to assume that those kelim were kosher.
So you have to decide what is a b'shasat hag for you, and then are you saying if you want to be extra, whatever, are those chumras, or are those, if it's not b'shasat hag, then it's usr for you to do it?
It's never usr. There's nothing here that's usr. Nothing here that's usr. If there's something usr, we would never tell you to do it. If there was a serious shayla, we would never tell you to do it. We're in the certification business. Mm-hmm. Our job is to really offer you things that don't have shaylas.
So you're saying even when they might wash that last dish or whatever in the pan or whatever it is?
It's still mutter.
It's still
mutter l'aloch. And the reason why it's mutter l'aloch is because according to every other person besides the Chazon Ish, if you really want to know, it became that all the positive kosher tastes, all non-kosher tastes became negative tastes in the dishwasher when they ran the soap through it at 165 degrees. That's the reason why according to every other opinion it would be mutter. Anyway, getting back to that. Dunkin' Donuts is a similar environment to Starbucks, except that Dunkin' Donuts assembles non-kosher. Starbucks just heats it up, and it's a little bit more limited. Dunkin' Donuts assembles non-kosher. But in today's sensitive environment to food safety, there was a famous case in 2011 where some people died from some peanuts. So everybody's worried about liability. Every single fast food operation in the United States is far cleaner and far safer than your home kitchens. There's no hand food contact. There's no cross-contamination between different areas. Everything gets sanitized either every couple of hours, certainly once a day. So it happens to be there's not a lot of cross-contamination in Dunkin' Donuts. In addition, Dunkin' Donuts has an advantage. At Dunkin' Donuts, they generally speaking, they do not use any hot water, halakhically hot water, in general, to wash anything. So one can reasonably assume that there's no cross-contamination between the coffee equipment and any other equipment. So you can buy a coffee in a Dunkin' Donuts really without much concern. Now, those stores, obviously, there are people. There's no guarantee that they actually do that. But in halacha, if you learn the Shulchan Aruch, which I encourage everybody to do, read in English, Hebrew, or Chinese, we do have the right to assume that certain things about foods that seem not to present issues, and you know, you could reasonably assume again. In the world that you live in, that you can go into a Dunkin' Donuts and buy a cup of coffee. At the start, you got to, again, it's important to know exactly what they're doing. The difference between Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks has an advantage. Starbucks, other than those in airports and rest areas and supermarkets, are company-owned. And there's no franchising going on. And they order everything from the company. It's all exactly the same stuff in every single place. Nobody can go off book. Dunkin' Donuts are audited very, very carefully by the company, but they're franchises. The individual stores are buying products. So that's a little bit less, I feel a little bit less comfortable about that. And it's something that we've addressed with them, because we have, as you'll see in a second, we do have a very dramatic relationship with Dunkin' Brands, which we'll get to if we make it through here. So, my general feeling is all the coffee in Dunkin' Donuts is kosher. I'm a little bit you know, I'm not ready to talk about other things, and I don't think there's any kind of an emergency for any of you people to drink anything else at Dunkin' Donuts. So they have a machine that makes, like, hot chocolate, an automatic machine. That automatic machine, everything is kosher and has absolutely no shiloh because there's no contact with anything, and it's self-cleaning. They have a little machine where everything comes out. I'm not talking about culottes and the mixes and that stuff. I'm talking about they have this machine that dispenses a bunch of couple of hot drinks, usually either to the left or the right of the thing. That's also fine. Really across the board. I mean, it's good to ask around, good to look at stuff, but I really don't think they have a compatible product that you can go out and buy something else. But again, Dunkin' Donuts maybe is a little bit less from for the moment. I'm hoping to one day develop a relationship with Dunkin' Donuts that we can go into hundreds of stores like we've done in some other chains so we could have better information. But certainly buying a cup of coffee is not such a big deal. 7-Elevens. So in 7-Elevens, 7-Elevens are less. If you call a Star K, in Baltimore, we'll tell you there's three Dunkin' Donuts in Reisterstown Road, two are kosher certified, one is not. We'll tell you don't buy even a glass of water in the one that's not kosher certified. And the reason for that is because you have two that are kosher. Why do that cup? Do you know what drag cup means? Spin your head around. Try to spin your head around. Do a 360 with your head. It's never going to work, so why are you trying to do it, right? That's a Yiddish expression. So 7-Elevens work a little bit differently. They have these big carafes, those urns. Those urns cannot be washed. The big urns, the big ones, they cannot be washed in a dishwasher. Okay, the way they're cleaned is something called Urnex. It's a product. I think the Star K certifies it. Is that yours? Barclough. Right. So, I getting something out of one of those carafes is, like, not an issue at all. When you start talking about, you know, but we tell people that if you there's all kinds of stuff, you don't know what they're doing. If you have a kosher option, go to a kosher option. One of the big disasters, are you the Rav Machshir of Urnex?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's the Rav Machshir of Urnex. Urnex is the way every one of those big carafes that's cleaned in place. They put a tablet in, they run hot water through it. It never, there's no contamination. You go to a gap, we'll talk about the C stores in a second, but, you know, some of the 7-Elevens have them now. They're no longer the pots. But you should know 7-Eleven is full of TRAF, and they're all franchises, and they don't have these audit programs like Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts, and they don't have the same level. You go into them, they have not yet been hit with a giant lawsuit. But when they are, they're going to be very kosher, I tell you. Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf is a unique company. It's owned by Orthodox Jews. They do have a franchising system, but it happens to be that the ingredient...
The West Coast, mostly.
Yes, the Sassoons.
Sorry, but back to 7-Eleven. How does 7-Eleven have the, like, across the board with the Slurpees if they're not?
Because Slurpees are all cold, and Slurpees are all, you know, there's no cross contamination with them. It's all a contained system. There's nothing to worry about.
Are all Slurpees kosher?
No, there's a number. You go on our website. I want to tell you. I really wish
hang in the 7-Eleven in
some places. The hanger, Rabbi Mostovsky hangs up. There's like three or four non-kosher flavors. You go on our Star K app. You can get them if you want. You can go, but if you go to the 7-Eleven Norfolk, you can get that. Slurpees are basically a non-issue.
I have a question.
That's not it. It's called cold. What can go wrong?
What about those new Coco freestyle machines that have the different syrups?
100% kosher certified. 100% by the OU. The whole freestyle machine is 100% kosher. Coffee Bean happens to be all their drink ingredients are kosher. They do have this issue about how they wash the stuff. But
some of them over there are certified. All the food in there, it's pre-packaged and...
In
Orange County, I mean, I was there.
It was one
a
year
ago.
Yeah.
I say it was terrific.
Sega? Yeah.
It was all
prepared. Now, on the West Coast, a lot of that stuff is kosher.
It was amazing.
Right? On the West Coast, a lot of that stuff is kosher. If you're a real nut, you can go into Starbucks, and we've convinced them that the cakes that they have that are kosher, they put a hechsherim in the boxes. So if you can go into the back of Starbucks, sometimes you can find a box of a product that'll have a hechsher on it. The individual plastic wrap product will not have a hechsher, but sometimes you can match it up. Like the blueberry muffin, often you can find this kosher. Sometimes the bagels are kosher. You have to have the little guts to go in the back. There are coffee beans on the West Coast that have a hechsher. There's even a Hulk Straw one on Beverly Boulevard.
Yeah.
Pete's is similar. Pete's is similar to Starbucks. Very clean place. Very, very clean place. One of the things about Starbucks that makes Starbucks awesome is that Starbucks has a proprietary espresso machine that has no... This is a shop divider, a Danish couple. It's not supposed to be washed in the dishwasher. There's really no parts that ever go anywhere. It's all self-contained, all cleaned in place. And that's the magic thing about Starbucks. Pizza's not the same thing. That's why I put pizza here. Nor is the coffee bean. They have, like, the little spoons for the espresso machine. So, again, if you're out and about, you'll buy a cup of coffee, you should feel comfortable with it. But again, you know, if you have a choice, try to stay away from those kind of places. Now, what was the last one I wanted to talk to you about? I said, et cetera. What was my et cetera?
rest stops or something?
Yeah, so you drive around, there's the Wawa's and there's all these things. So, again, fundamentally from a halakhic perspective, a person has a right to, you have a right to drink, like a plain cup of coffee, if you have some sort of, you need a cup of coffee and you're driving on the road. But I always tell people, right, pay attention to what you're drinking. Okay? So there's flavored coffees, which we always tell people they should be certified. Pay attention to what's going on. So I went into a store once, and I was thinking about buying. I remember exactly where it was. It was in New York City. I went to a store that had kosher certification on it. And I went into the store, and I'm like, this place is not kosher, right? You go and use your eyes. Go and look. And I was 100% right. The kosher certification was total baloney. Mm-hmm. When I got closer to look at it, it was like a kosher certification that, for the company that provided them with the coffee. And my trick there was I noticed that they were sort of like rolling hot dogs right next door. And, the fellow with the red dot on his forehead was a very nice man. I have nothing against him. I want to wear black boxes on my head. He can have a red dot on his forehead. But he definitely was not an approved mushkin. Okay, so that's coffee.
McDonald's?
Okay, so that, I guess that was another one of my etcetera's. I'm not a fan of going into a McDonald's. Because when I grew up, McDonald's was a dirty place, and anybody who worked in one knew that they used the same scoop for the French fries as for the ice that they put in the sodas. However, it's definitely a lot cleaner than it used to be. There is a chain in outside the United States, I think you've seen a lot in South America, called McCafe, which is like a Starbucks owned by McDonald's. If there's another option, you go into McDonald's and you try to find something that looks pretty clean. I guess,
Maris
Ayin-ish in any places? So, Maris Ayin, this idea of going to a non-kosher place, as long as there's something kosher you could buy in the place, I don't think that there's a, as long as there's a reasonable reason why a kosher observant person could be found in such a place, I don't believe that there's a halachic prohibition of walking into such a place.
How about Wawa's? Wawa's
the same thing. SEC store, it's the same thing. If you have the big carafe,
right,
and the coffee's unflavored, there's really nothing. There's not much that can go wrong. Okay, Baskin Robbins, ice cream and froyo. So everybody wants to eat ice cream. So the good news about Baskin Robbins. Yeah.
I just want to go back. There's a lot of the most common coffee in Norfolk is by 7-Eleven. So the ones with the small pot of coffee. Should be avoided?
No, I'm not saying you should avoid it. I'm saying it's less, it's in glass, it's very hard to screw up. And it's less awesome than the ones, it used to be they never washed the stuff. Now they're washing it a little bit more. Right? It's great, it really depends what goes on their franchises, what I'm saying?
But if you have a choice between one with a big craft or that?
The big ones big ones are gorgeous. Okay, so let's talk about ice cream. So here you go. So. I want to explain. Baskin-Robbins is a franchise, but Baskin-Robbins ice cream is made centrally. Every flavor of Baskin-Robbins ice cream is kosher, except for Rocky Road. Okay, it's all certified by the Star D. You can go in and comfortably buy every kind of ice cream in the store besides for Rocky Road. Now,
every Baskin-Robbins, they don't have the letter of?
Every Baskin-Robbins on the planet, in the United States and Mexico, for sure.
They have that.
Yes, it's all the same thing. Dunkin' Brands is owned by the same company. Now, so everybody wants to know, what about the toppings? What about the sauces? What about this?
What's wrong with Rocky Road?
It has trace marshmallows in it. What about the toppings? What about the sauces? Okay, so the answer to the question is, the truth is, they're all kosher. However, somebody needs to check them out. So in Norfolk, you have a solution. Talibin Mostovsky has to go into the Dunkin' Donuts, into the Baskin Robbins, and he's got to go check and make sure all the stuff is kosher. And he'll tell you if all the stuff is kosher. You're going to give a hechsher to it while they have treif sandwiches over there and Rocky Road ice cream. Maybe not. There are programs, there are places that do it, but at least he might be able to tell you. I used to go in Phoenix into these places, and I would tell people that as long as I was reasonably comfortable with it, I would tell people that they're all good to go. However, there's gummy bears that are not kosher guaranteed. There's a marshmallow topping. The same thing. I should have wrote this called Cold Stone Creamery is a similar situation, right? But the issue is, and the issue with all these is, it's central supply, right? Central supply, but local control. Franchises. This is not so. Baskin Robbins is super controlled, right? You could 31 flavors tell you which flavors are there. I'm super comfortable. All the Baskin Robbins, I know we take care of it. Baskin Robbins after Rocky Road is kosher. The ice cream and the soft ice cream, everything is kosher every day of the year. And when you check in the store, you will find them. We advise you to check because theoretically they can go out and get a different caramel sauce or a different patina peanut butter sauce or a different chocolate fudge or something. There's nothing else that they could do with that chocolate fudge machine. Nothing else they could do with it but you do chocolate fudge, so I'm not so worried about it. As long as the product that went in is kosher, it's fine, but somebody should look at it. Same thing with the toppings. They're all supposed to be kosher, you gotta check. The cones, they're all supposed to be kosher, you gotta check. But, you know, the dipped cones in the place, I don't know exactly what they do. We don't make a promise. Somebody should go local and look in, or do it yourself. Walk in and say, show me the caramel sauce, show me the chocolate sauce, show me the topping, etc. And then, you know, it's really a very nice thing, as long as, of course, you don't keep Chol V'Shol, then you'd want to stick to the power of things over there. Now,
do you have to be worried?
When I was a kid, I'm going to answer your question. When I was a kid, I didn't know much about halacha. What about the scoop? Okay, I've always said, there's nothing wrong with the scoop. It's cold. They clean them. And there's no bleeds. There's no, you know, nothing's going to happen from the marshmallow. Nothing from the marshmallow is going to go into the scoop. It's impossible. It's a whole marshmallow. It's not going in. Danish cup. It's amaratzis. It's a chil Hashem for people as smart as Jews to be worried about the Rocky Road ice cream in Baskin Robbins. I don't want to hear you talk about it. I am not going to entertain the question. It's fake news. It's alternative facts. Okay. In Baskin Robbins, all the whipped cream is kosher, certified. Okay. Rita's is the same kind of story. Rita's, yes, it's local control, but it's a franchise. Rita's, you're going to go in, you say, let me look at the stuff. Rita's does not have an organization like the Star D taking care of Star K taking care of it. But you go into a Rita's, you have kosher Rita's by you?
We used to, but they closed.
You go into the Rita's, I, you know, if you get stuck, you know, I got stuck downtown Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, every corner there's a Rita's for them. They only open like 7 months a year. It's funny. So I go out to Philadelphia and say, we're going to make you kosher for 15 minutes. I walk in, check all the stuff, everything but the Swedish fish and the marshmallows are usually kosher. You know, and you could really, you know, you could give yourself a hechsher in such a place, but you should check. It's a franchise. And Froyo chains are the same way. Now, Froyo chains are, I wrote them there because Froyo chains are Yadua L'Shem, so they are notorious for putting hechsherim on their machines that are meaningless. Let me explain how Froyo works. Froyo works like all soft ice cream. They put a base in it, and they often add flavors. Right, so the flavor could be kosher, not the base. The base could be kosher, not the flavor. Chances are they're kosher if they make the claim, or even if they don't make the claim. Go and check. Be nice to people, or don't eat it. If you're not willing to ask them to see what they put in, don't eat. It can be non-kosher, but it's all cold. So if you see that the base they're using is a kosher base, and the flavor they put in is a kosher flavor, right, and the topping that they have is a kosher topping, you know, remember, you guys get extra credit because you don't live in Baltimore or, God forbid, New York or the tri-state area or Los Angeles, one of those other ugly places. You live in the dream. You're keeping the Torah the way it was meant to be kept without too many Jews together. Historical ancient Israel was an agricultural society. Distance makes the heart grow fonder. Jews lived for like 1,000 years in absolute peace as long as we didn't live next door to each other. Okay? Remember that. Remember that. So, you know, we give you an extra, you know, I know I'm being recorded. So we give you an extra credit. You can go into the store and check it out yourself or make Rabbi Mostovsky do it for you and feel comfortable, especially if you're out in Western Virginia or something. You know.
Skinny,
it's
not Froyo.
Okay, it's frozen yogurt.
Oh, okay.
What do you call it?
We certify some of these. We have like a...
Good, then you have to go to his. Then you have to go to his. It's the same thing. If you have a kosher place, you want to go in and check it. Check it out. Especially if you're traveling. If you're local, support your local. By the way, I want to tell you something. If you have something kosher certified there, you should go there no matter what. Even if you hate the stuff, buy it and throw it in the garbage. You have no idea. It's like making a donation to your local school. There's somebody out there that needs to eat that product, and you also support it. So if you have a kosher X... Go there, buy the stuff, and throw it in the garbage. Right? You gotta go. You gotta. It's not. I'm telling you. That's the way it goes. Okay. So I'm going
to go to Mr. Shawarma as much as possible. He's saying, even if you don't want the food, just throw it away. But you gotta support it because the next guy wants to eat kosher food.
Right.
He's coming out.
Mr. Shawarma's putting a blame.
We actually have a. For the first time in Norfolk, we have a Flasic restaurant that 99% of the clientele are good.
It's amazing.
fucking lazy.
It's the way to do it. It's a shawarma place, Israelis, and we think because of the military, Navy, half of these guys were in the Middle East at one point. Yeah. They all love shawarma. It's packed.
There's one in Silver Spring like that all.
Unbelievable. And it's great for us because we don't have to actually always go and throw out the food if we don't want, but not that we did. It's delicious anyway, but it's just...
That's a waste.
Matt, you gave me a reason to come to Norfolk.
You should come.
Yeah. 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 Let's get down and come for that shawarma.
And the Israelis.
Okay, so you go to supermarkets. You probably don't have a kosher supermarket down there, do you?
We have a small kosher section in one of our supermarkets.
Sounds great. So, you go to the supermarket. I'm really turned on about that. Okay. Yes. Yes. Especially the same bottle. It's been there for... So everybody wants to know about buying fish. Well, let me tell you. Fish without skin. Unless it's... Even though it's lucky, it doesn't accept that, but... Fish without skin, unless it's salmon, there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to talk about. A fish fillet, white flesh fish fillet, without skin, there's absolutely nothing to talk about. You have no guarantee that it's kosher. I don't care how sure you think you are that it looks like that. If you don't have a truly reliable hashgacha, and that's some off-brand, if you don't see a classical hashgacha on that fish, forget it. You have no way of knowing if it's kosher or not kosher. Even sometimes when it actually could get into trouble, you really got to look carefully. You know, we require, the Starkey requires every fish to be checked by a mashgiach before skin comes off. And even salmon, because you can color salmon, not the color that we have in this common salmon that you find. I'm talking about dyed salmon, which is a different story. But there are certain extreme that will allow a salmon product without a skin. It's a defensible heter. You know, maybe ahi tuna also is a defensible heter without skin. But, you know, that's something to be extremely careful of. Now, if you do have an identified kosher fish, and you buy it from a non-kosher environment, you can use it, despite the fact that it may have been commingled or cut in a way that it might have come into contact with non-kosher stuff. There's two things you got to do. You got to rinse it off, and you got to take the edge of a blade and run it over wherever their knife went. And the reason for that is
wherever
if it's cooked, wherever it's been cut.
Okay.
Beforehand. So if you talk about a salmon fillet, so you'd run it over the top and the sides. Okay. And you should know a whole salmon fillet from your supermarket comes from a salmon factory. Right? And if you get it straight out of the salmon box, you don't have to do that. It's really when it's been cut up, that's when you start having that issue. Or if it's another fish, again, you want to have the skin. You don't have to have the actual scales, but you have to be able to feel that the scales were there. You have to know there are some fish that don't have scales on one of their sides. Halibut famously has scales only on one side, so you can have a challenge sometimes buying halibut, because you don't, if you're not a super expert, you're not going to know whether it's a kosher fish or a non-kosher fish. So, you know, you gotta wake up early in the morning. What?
I just buy for the halibut.
Flounder also.
Right.
Flounder also.
They're in the same thing.
Flounder is the same thing. It's like a halibut. It's like a flat fish. Right. It's kind of weird. You know, again, you know, use your brains, talk to your rabbi, talk to your local fish scientist. You know, it's nice to go there, have them wash down the counter, you know, bring your knife, wash your knife, whatever, all that kind of stuff. It's usually not so practical. People don't tend to do that. Most supermarkets, and you can check for yourself in your own supermarket if you're going to the same one, but if you're traveling, you can sort of guess. Most supermarkets have a separate fruit room where they cut fruit with dedicated equipment for food safety reasons. And you could, you know, arguably buy any cut fruit in any supermarket that you want, wherever you go in the United States, because it's dedicated and cold and all fine and dandy. Yes, it's nice if you buy it with a hechsher, we love it. Starkey gives a lot of those hechsher, but you know, the fact is, those are the facts.
But not fruit with that could be infested with bugs.
With strawberries.
Not any cut
strawberries, things like that.
Things they didn't wash. Strawberries.
The only thing I can think of that would be an issue would be strawberries, and they wouldn't cut the strawberries. I'm talking about cutting the fruit. You can look at the strawberries if you like and see if the bugs are there. And if you don't see them, then you could eat them. But that's you know, another discussion. But yes, usually the cut fruit, when you get a platter cut fruit, you're talking about cantaloupe and pineapple and stuff like that.
Do you have to wash fruit before you eat it?
Cut fruit?
No, just like the strawberry. If you pick up the strawberry, do you have to wash it halachically before you eat it?
The technical halach is if you look at it, you don't see the bugs, then you don't have to wash it. I think it's crazy to eat fruit it's not washed for other reasons. I think it's insane. We recommend that something like strawberries be put in a soap bath because there are very small bugs which are, you know, maybe they're known to be there. So we tell people that they should wash them in soap to get rid of them. To say that it's a halacha that you're obligated to do that once you see something and you look at it and you don't see a bug, you're not obligated to do anything from a halakhic perspective. From a food safety perspective, you'd be bananas. You'd hear people getting sick and dying from eating lettuce, from E. coli infestations. You'd be really nuts not to wash your fruit. So, I don't know. Because, I mean, remember, this is not local. Unless you're buying something from next door, it could come from all over the place. It changes hands and it goes all over the place. It's really not a smart idea not to wash your stuff. It's, in fact, we, you know, everybody's, oh, what are you, Rabbi, you nuts, you're telling me to wash it with soap? You know, it's great to wash it with soap. Soap kills a lot of germs. And it lasts longer. Lettuce lasts much longer after you wash it with soap. It's a great practice to do. Great practice to do. Lettuce, because the soap kills the bacteria, it's a beautiful thing. Forget about the fact that it helps, you know, keep it clean. You don't have to worry about the bugs in it, etc. But it's much helpful. So vegetables. So you go in the store and you have cut vegetables. Well, generally speaking, the vegetable that has the most visible, really naked eye visible bugs is broccoli. So when you go into a store and you're buying cut vegetables, often the cut vegetables will have broccoli. So I tend not to buy those kind of vegetables. But every other cut vegetable is the same thing. It's really the same thing. You don't have to be afraid. Even onions, you don't have to be afraid. They're always dedicated equipment. You don't have to worry that they cut the ham and then they cut the onions, which would make the onions non-kosher. Inflation's non-kosher. But
does the same thing apply if you're at a salad bar?
No, absolutely not. I'm talking about a supermarket. And
package. No, I mean the supermarket salad bar.
I'm talking about a supermarket that's giving you package stuff. Once you go to a salad bar, all bets are off. Open stuff.
Farm Fresh, right next to the kosher section, is the whole fruit thing. The whole area. They just cut fruit. It's all the things back there. They might put something out by the salad bar, but that's not what
it's about. I'm not suggesting that. I'm talking about something that's packaged back in a room that only has vegetables and fruit. I'm not advocating buying anything off a salad bar. And I'll tell you, I could advocate such a thing. I could fool myself into it. But if you spend any time in supermarkets, you know this is a bad idea. There's one city, one of the worst cities to visit for kosher food is San Francisco. So, I usually go to San Francisco a couple times a year.
They have a kosher restaurant.
They have one kosher restaurant. That's good. Thank you. Anyway, so often I'll go to a supermarket. Right? You know, I don't like schlepping food. I become a hotel room chef, so I put this together. So, you know, you buy some stuff from a supermarket, and then you go and you kosher your microwave. How can you kosher your microwave? So you look on the StarCat website. We say that if it's clean and you don't put anything directly on any of the things over there, cover it, you boil some water in it, your microwave is kosher. I just cover the stuff inside the microwave. You can make some wonderful fish, and you can make some cooked vegetables, and you eat some fresh fruit and some fresh vegetables. And also, you find also another thing that you can do, and this is very true. There are a lot of packaged pre-washed vegetable products that you can eat, like baby carrots, snap peas, broccoli slaw. Some of them will have extra, some of them won't have extra. When they have extra, it's because it's kosher anyway, because nobody goes to that carrot factory more than once a year, which is great. We give you the confidence. We make sure that the carrot factory only has carrots in it. But
any broccoli slaw is okay?
Yeah, more or less. Broccoli slaw should be fine. We give a extra to it. You know, we go and we check and make sure they're only using the stalks and so on and so forth. Broccoli slaw should be okay. The problem with the broccoli is that you could open broccoli at certain times of the year and turn it over and see the giant full adult aphids in it. And you'd never know. When I discovered it, I first discovered it on a restaurant plate many years ago. And I asked somebody in the restaurant business, not a kosher person, I asked them, so is this guy, yeah, nobody looks at them. Nobody ever saw it. It's okay. Right? But this is really visible. I as a rabbi, I'm like, if I look at it and I see it, I can't fool myself and think this is permissible. So, But there are things you could find on the shelf that you could even, pre-washed salads. You could check them. It's not like Kabbalah to check your vegetables. Check your vegetables. Look at them. You know, you want to do it fancy. Put them in water. I was in Mexico with a group of rabbis, and we went to the supermarket. We had to feed ourselves for 3 days. I went to a kosher slaughter down there. So I bought hydroponic lettuce. I washed it in the bathroom sink. It was very easy. It was a white sink. I filled it up with, I filled it up with water and soap. I washed the vegetables, washed the lettuce. A lot of checking vegetables is about cleaning them. It's about cleaning them, yes. I'm not Hasidish. I'd be surprised it's a Zohar. It's not halacha. I come from my Rebbe, Rav Asher HaRei'eli, in the mirror, came downstairs once. And he saw, Hasidim have this minhag. and they have a custom that they wash their morning the Tefillah Sudaim right next to their bed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right next to their bed. And everybody's familiar with it, right? You know, a lot of halachas are familiar with this halach. My Rebbe comes downstairs and he sees that in the bathroom there's like 25 basins, you know, lined up. And he says, "What's that?" So the guy says they're washing the Tefillah Sudaim with it. Obviously next to the bed, but the guys are just washing the Tefillah Sudaim, washing their hands in the morning. He says, "How do you wash your hands with a basin? And why do they need 25 in the bathroom? Couldn't they use one?" Right? The idea that anybody would wash their, in a non-Hasidic yeshiva, would wash their hands next to their bed because of a Kabbalistic custom was anathema to him. It was a shock. And the reason why is because during the time of Shabtai Tzvi, who was a false messiah, some of you might be familiar, espoused many Kabbalistic customs. In Lithuania and Germany, what they did was, is they immediately, because these are non-halachic things, erased every forbade every Kabbalistic custom out there, every single one. Every single one. Not allowed to do any of them. So you got to stay away from that stuff. When the Ramchal, in Lithuania and Germany, when the Ramchal came to Germany, to Frankfurt, the famous Rabbi Yaakov Chaim HaKohen Papers, who was the great chief rabbi of Frankfurt in the 1700s, he brought the Ramchal into his office with the whole Besdin, the rabbinical court of Frankfurt, which is a very scary bunch of German rabbis, and he said, "Okay, fine, give us all the stuff that you wrote, let's see." He said, "Oh, thank you very much." They put it in a box, and they buried it in the cemetery. And they forced him to hold the Torah scroll and swear that he would never write or teach Kabbalah again, the great Ramchal. Great Ramchal said, "You want to live here? That's what you have to do." And he did it. I don't know if he ever wrote a Kabbalah again. Imagine what they would have had. Lucky they didn't bury the Mesillas Yesharim. And not that I'm not a fan of the Ramchal. Ramchal was a fabulous clean-shaven Kabbalist in the tradition of the Italian Kabbalists. I'm a very big fan of Ramchal, and the love of Ramchal. But yeah, you know, if my choice was not to eat or wash stuff in the bathroom, I washed in the bathroom. The Kabbalistic concept of not bringing food into a bathroom is talking about an outhouse where the produce or the work product of the efforts we make in the bathroom stays sort of in the vicinity. It wasn't talking about a hotel bathroom. Maybe say that's a beis hakisa she'ena kavua. It's not a regular bathroom. So even the Kabbalists might have been okay with me washing the lettuce in the sink. So coffee pots. You have a coffee pot in your hotel room. Rabbi Heinemann was once shown a video by our esteemed president, Dr. Pollack, of the shenanigans that people do in their hotel, people and the hotel staff do when they clean up the hotels, and those shenanigans led him to suggest that maybe it's not such a good idea to use the coffee pots in hotels, because who knows what people do with them. But today, most of the coffee pots are, first of all, halachically, it is acceptable, especially because they're glass. And also, a lot of the hotels no longer have a pot. They just have like a plastic thing. You put the pot in, and you put a paper cup underneath, and it's not such
and
an issue.
You said the microwaves you could kosher them?
Yeah, we feel that you can kosher them, yes. Yes. In general, a microwave can be kosher. Yeah, and even that's a mitzvah. Yes, even that's a mitzvah. A microwave can't really become treif.
What about a work microwave? I double cover my food. I use a work microwave.
That's for sure fine. Okay. I think it's a good idea. I always tell people that despite the fact that Moshe Feinstein said a microwave is nothing, but that's also in the theory that it's clean. I always tell people in my house I don't use the same microwave for multiple situations. Even though from a technical halakhic perspective, especially if you cover it should be fine. But things are always dirty. It's a very good practice to cover your food in a microwave, and then you know it's a lot easier to deal with. But you should really be careful. The microwave shouldn't be dirty, because then things can go wrong. You go to hotels and motels and bars, so there are a lot of issues. Okay, a lot of issues. So first of all, coffee and tea in a hotel, you know, theoretically sounds fine and dandy, but you really got to know where did it come from and what equipment it traveled in before you got to it. A lot of them would have the same status like your coffee shops. Now, we made such a big tumult about coffee shops, you should know that many kashrus agencies have never kashered coffee pots in their entire history, despite the fact that they were used in the hotels and pitchers. But those pitchers can be treif, they could be used to spoon out soup or sauce, that could be mama's treif. So, you know, let's think carefully. My point over here is you go to a hotel, you go to an event, let's think carefully before you drink the coffee. You want to go to a hotel coffee shop, so that would be like your Starbucks. You go on anywhere else, you should really think carefully, look at how they're serving the coffee, what it's coming from. You know, sometimes the coffee will be very kosher when it comes out, right, when they make the coffee, because they have these giant machines in the backs of hotels that make coffee that can never get near anything non-kosher. But, you know, as they trickle down towards you, the rules might be different. We tend, that would be true on a plane also, but on a plane you have no other options, so you drink the coffee. Like we said, the Nedeb Yehuda is somebody to rely on. But again, you know, go to the hotel, think about what you're drinking. Look how it's happening. Look where you're getting it from. Maybe it's not such a smart idea. Maybe there's a better option. Maybe it's better to drink some water or some Coke or something like that, which is a much smaller issue. A bar, the difference between the bar and the lobby. Well, you know, there's a fascinating halacha. There's a fascinating halacha. By the way, whenever I have to stop, I'm happy to.
3 minutes.
Okay. There's a fascinating halacha I think it's fair to share with you. Many of the kosher laws are rabbinic enactments to try to ensure Jewish continuity. We require Bishul Yisrael for many things, for many special foods, require a Jew to be involved in the cooking. The idea is to limit our ability to eat with the non-Jews, especially in the context of this talk about all eating at treif restaurants. It behooves me to remind you that there is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that is uncomfortable with the idea of going over, being in a non-Jewish environment and drinking alcoholic beverages. Now, I'm not telling you that you know a bar is exactly what the halacha was talking about, but such a sensitivity there is a significant thing. I personally have a practice. My personal practice is that I will not have a meeting with somebody in a bar, and drink an alcoholic beverage. Even though I have nothing against alcoholic beverages, I think they're great. But I don't do that. And for whatever reason, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I was raised not to do that. If I go to a bar, I will not drink an alcoholic beverage inside of a bar. However, in a lobby or like in an airport, I don't consider that a bar. Right? If you get stuck for 7 hours in the Houston airport, you want to have a few beers, that's okay with me. Well, right? And I feel less comfortable. I'm not saying clearly that the halach is that way. The place Rabbi Heinemann likes to say is the real issue is but in a brew pub, where they're making the stuff there. That's actually an enactment. There's a halachic enactment. The place where they make the alcohol is some sort of an issue. That's the way the gzera is formulated.
So you're talking about the microbreweries that are around.
If you go into the place where they're brewing the stuff, right? Then you know there actually may be a halachic issue with that.
Wait, so we just had a JCC event in a brewery.
We had our own
rooms. Yeah, I didn't say that for sure. I said, you know, you could talk about it. I'm not telling you, I'm not passing a halacha. I want to sensitize you to the idea that the same way.
It might.
If you're
drinking with Jews.
Yes, that's also the issue. If you're drinking with Jews, that's a different issue. But I want to sensitize you to the idea, as I talked to you about going into all these non-Jewish places and eating and drinking non-Jewish stuff, we should be sensitized to the idea that we're only here because we've been protected from the social integration that comes from overindulging together with the people around us. In our generation, we're more than 50% of the Jews in the last 20 years. Maybe more than 60% of the Jews have married out and slowly disappeared. It's something to be sensitive to. Kosher food, a lot of times we go to a place, they tell us it's kosher. Well, verify it. I saw it with my own eyes. It was an event that we certified. Okay, I watched somebody and I chased after them. I watched somebody. There was a strictly kosher room at a conference. It was a professional conference. Normally we wouldn't do this. Normally we would require the full conference to be kosher. But it was a professional conference, like you know the American Association of Lawyers or other rip-off artists, whatever. And you know there was a high. Okay. I like lawyers too. I'm a Jewish lawyer, but I use that because I figured I can get a laugh out of you guys. Wake you up after all this talking. So we go in there. And there's a side room that, you know, everybody knows this is a kosher room and so on and so forth. I watched the guy with the yarmulke head straight into the main dining room, and I ran after him. And I caught him at the buffet. It was from far away. I got him and I said, with all due respect, I assume that your yarmulke suggests that you're looking for glatt kosher food. And I don't mean to offend you if I'm wrong. I really apologize for my wrong. He looks, of course. Oh, thank God. You never know. Right? I'm saying, like, this is glatt treif. Right, because he didn't find somebody to tell him that was. It's enough. Halachically, somebody should at least tell you that it's kosher. Nice if that person is wearing a yarmulke and he has hashgacha. Maybe there's a card that says that it's kosher. That would be a nice thing. You go into a vacation home in an RV. You want to think about this. You know, you could kosher everything or a lot of things there. Your oven, you can kosher if you know how to do it. You know, look at the Stargate website where you're running out of time. Sinks, sometimes counters. Sometimes you don't kosher the sink. You just put a grate in the top and don't use hot water. Don't put hot and wet things on the counter, a microwave. Pots and pans, sometimes you can kosher. Frying pans, not. pots are easy to kosher. Flatware sometimes, yeah. Glasses for some uses, I think would be fine. Your refrigerator, got to make sure it's not an issue for Shabbos. You know, you can go on a ship. How do you solve your problem on a ship? But he wants to daven mincha. What do you do if you go to your mother-in-law's house, whether it's kosher or not? You're not going to find out because they want me to stop.
Nobody wants to go to their mother-in-law anyway.
What?
Nobody wants to go to their mother-in-law anyway.
Me?